On agenda this evening, Paul Crane MLC joins me to assess the latest population figures. But first, MLC and children's champion Kerry Sharp considers the recently announced Ballachamin toilet policy and how children's rights have changed over the decades. The toilet policy has certainly attracted a lot of interest, with vociferous argument for and against. So it's good to have a philosophical reflection on the topic. Perhaps we should begin with the Ballachamin policy. The head teacher of Ballachamin has spoken in defence of the secondary school's new rules around visiting the toilets during lesson time. Students have been told that they are not to leave the classroom unless they have a medical issue or it is an extraordinary situation. In a statement to Manx Radio, Graham Corran says, "There will of course be times and situations where students need to leave lessons and teachers are able to show understanding and use their professional judgment and discretion." Mr. Corran says they are embedding a culture at Ballachamin where every second of learning time counts. "This means we are working together, adults and students, as a team." Mr. Corran added, "In my letter to families, I outlined the rationale for the actions that we have taken regarding toilet facilities, which are intended to ensure that lesson time is not missed. We are encouraging students to visit toilets before school, at breaks and at lunchtime, rather than leaving lessons and missing out." Kerry Sharp, MLC, is the government's children's champion. What did she make of the new policy?
When I first heard about this, I thought, 40 years ago when I was in secondary school, you were not to leave the classroom and it was just an unwritten rule. Now, I think what's interesting in terms of policy in relation to children's rights and that sort of thing. If you look at Article 3 of the Children's Rights, it's stated that in all actions concerning children, whether undertaken by public or private social welfare institutions, courts of law, administrative authorities or legislative bodies, the best interests of the child shall be the primary consideration. So I suppose as children's champion, what I'm doing is I'm looking at this recent school policy and asking myself, well, is it in the best interest of the child? I suppose from the school's point of view, we know that attendance in schools since COVID has dropped. And we know that bad behaviour within the classroom of all ages has increased. And we know that the number of suspensions have increased. And we know that the number of children absent from lessons and leaving the classroom has increased. So I suppose from the school's point of view, what they're saying is we're here to provide an education. And we know, because research shows, that the hours spent in a classroom translate into better exam results. So from the school's point of view, I suppose it's in their best interests to keep children in the classroom. On the other hand, I think what's interesting, what the kind of conversations that I've had with high school students recently who've been into Tynwald, they're asking the question, well, if I want to go to the toilet, why shouldn't I be able to go to the toilet? You know, if you were at work, adults can go to the toilet whenever they want. And I think what's interesting is that there's a big difference between 40 years ago when I was at secondary school and now. I think students are more likely to compare their rights with those of adults. But also, thinking about it, if you're in the workplace and you know you're going into a meeting and it's going to last about an hour, you do go to the toilet beforehand. So I think there's a bit of a balance there. I've had people get in touch with me, young people, who said they don't use the toilets during break because, first of all, they're queuing for so long that they don't actually get into the toilet. They say that the toilets are full of people who are vaping and they don't want to go in. People are vaping. And they say that they get bullied when they go into the toilets because, I mean, it's the same as 40 years ago. There's always a certain group of young people who are hanging out in the toilets at break, looking to intimidate other people. And I think 40 years ago, we would have all just ran the gauntlet and put up with the comments, you know. But again, nowadays, young people are saying, well, actually, if I just want to go to the toilet in peace, you know, what why should I have to be victimized? So I think it's really good that students are pointing out these issues, and I think there are big conversations that need to be had between the students, either sort of directly with their head teachers or through their school councils, or we now have a Tim Wald standing committee, youth committee, and maybe that might be a topic that could be put forward to the youth committee. I think what's also interesting is that girls are beginning to talk more about periods and the effect that their periods have on them at school. I know that one of the high schools has done research into how many hours have girls miss due to periods, period pain, period-related problems. Girls are saying, well, you know, why should we have to explain to a teacher that we want to go and change our sanitary product, you know? And I think that this is interesting as well, because it relates to stigma and social stigma, the fact that periods, there's still a stigma surrounding them. Some students last week or the week before, when they were in Tim Wald making a visit, they raised the question, well, if you're at work or if you're at school, you go to the toilet, there's toilet paper there. So, you know, why aren't there sanitary products in workplaces and schools? And of course, if there were to be, then period products would become a lot more normalised for a start. And also, it would help to combat the problem of period poverty, because we also know that, unfortunately, girls in Britain are not going to school sometimes because their parents can't afford sanitary products. So, of course, if sanitary products were available in school toilets, then that would get around that problem. Well, I think even with this kind of policy, it has to come with caveats. For example, you know, if a child desperately needs to go to the toilet, they still need to be able to go to the toilet. You know, if it's an emergency, because having to go to the toilet is classified as an emergency. I mean, even if you're caught speeding in the UK, I know on a motorway, having to go to the toilet and rushing to get to the next motorway service station is actually taken into account by police. So it's classified as a medical emergency. On the other hand, I know that having read research that various teaching unions have done in the UK, they've found that a lot of children are leaving the classroom in order to vape. And then they come back and they can't concentrate because they've had a sort of a high, is it caffeine in vapes? I'm not quite sure. I've never had a vape, but anyway. Going back to the question. I think what schools have to do is to look at, you know, what are the root causes of this deterioration in behaviour, and why should young people be vandalising the toilets at school? And I think that this is something which the department at the moment, definitely I would say in terms of funding, probably doesn't have the resources to do. But having said that, the deterioration in behaviour at school is definitely an issue that has to be tackled as soon as possible, and resources are just going to have to be made available, because teachers have got in touch with me who've said that they've never seen the behavioural problems that they are seeing now post-COVID.
And part of the £18 million budget enhancement that the Department of Education has received for the coming financial year is presumably to cover things like additional educational needs. I know they had bids in for additional funding in previous years, which weren't fully funded. So presumably that extra money is going to help.
Well, I think that any extra resources are going to help, but the actual scale of what's needed, I think, is something that the department is going to have to seriously look at.
And in terms of this change in behaviour, and it does appear that it's a change, and perhaps it's been gradually happening over a period of time. Maybe you can tell me, as children champion, you hopefully you know a bit more about it than I do. But are there any indications as to what is causing this change in behaviour, the worsening in behaviour from certain children in schools?
Well, I mean, that's a $6 million question, and it's something that is affecting children, not just in the Isle of Man. I think this is a global issue. There's two things, really. There's an increase in what you'd call bad behaviour in the classroom, and teachers that I've spoken to have put this down a lot to lockdown and children who just didn't get those years, those sort of preschool years of socialisation. But there's also an increase in people with official additional needs coming into schools. I mean, in one case, a couple of years ago, there was a year seven group coming into one of our high schools, and almost half of those children had official additional needs. I was inspired by what female students from our secondary schools had to say recently when they came to visit Tynwald. And so I looked into period positive schools and workplaces in a bit more detail. One thing which, you know, we can all do to sort of help with this situation is to make sure that our households are period positive. So it occurred to me that although I have bins in bathrooms in my house for guests to use for used period products, I can also just put some towels or tampons in the bathrooms for guests with a note just saying, "Dear guests, please use these products if you want them and use the bin to dispose of them." And I think that if we all did that, if we all did our bit to normalise periods, then in terms of stigma, I think it would do a lot to alleviate that.
That was Kerry Sharp, MLC. Government is eager to increase the economically active population. Does MLC and Manx statistics enthusiast Paul Crane see signs of progress?
Whilst the natural population of the island, you've probably got a better term for than I have, has fallen dramatically, there is some good news as well in terms of inward migration.
Yes, that's right. The news release that I put out was primarily about the figures for births and deaths in 2023 when they were released. It was apparent that births had risen, but only very slightly, risen by 24. They rose again, they rose previously in 2021 and then went down to 2022. So a rise last year doesn't mean anything in terms of a long-term trend. The hope would be that the decline in births, which was down 43% in 12 years, the hope would be that that decline has come to an end. But the number of deaths last year exceeded births by more than 250, and therefore the natural population change, as you referred to, was negative. You know, we are not replacing deaths with births at the moment. We're a long way down on that. So there's a big gap between those. For the population to grow, which is part of the economic strategy and the island plan and so on, for the population to grow, you need either births greater than deaths, or you need more movement in than movement out. Clearly, we haven't got the first of those, but the evidence that we've got, the second of those, is quite considerable. I referred firstly to a document that came out from Statistics Isle of Man in October, a look at the population there, and they were identifying that there had been population growth since the last census. They're using what they've referred to as an experimental method, where instead of using the traditional numbers registered with doctors, which has some difficulties because people don't deregister when they leave sometimes, they've been using income tax data. And so that has helped to give them a better picture. And they're saying that in the period after the election, we've had more moving in than moving out. The people moving in have been younger than those moving out. And overall, the people moving in have been younger than the total population. So this would be Slow growth, but good news that we're seeing younger people move in, and these people are coming in for jobs and that side of things.
And I suppose in relation to being registered with a doctor, you can see why people may be slow to deregister. But in terms of paying income tax, there's very few people will pay income tax unless they have to.
Well, I could understand that, and I think it's recognised too that there may be some delays in my own thoughts. I think that if you're using more than one source, that's useful. So if you're using the numbers for income tax purposes and the numbers for medical purpose registering with doctors, if you're using both of those, that perhaps gives you a better indicator. The indicator that I've looked to see can I support the view coming from the income tax figures that there's more moving in than going out. I've used for some time now the school roll data. Clearly, the numbers of students, as the births have fallen, the number of students in our schools has fallen. At the moment, we've got over 1,000 students in year 10 and only 700 odd in year one, because the numbers are going down each year. But if you take the individual year groups, so if you take, and for instance, I'd looked at the period between 2016 and 2021. And if you took years 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and you moved it on 5 years, so you look at those groups from 2016, they were still there in 2021, or most of them were. And over that five-year period, movement in and movement out must have been balanced, because the number of students passing from years 1 to 6 up to years 5 to 11, they had hardly changed at all, the total number. But if you look since 2001, and we've only had a two-year spell there of the numbers registered in schools, 12,000 odd students registered each year in total. The groups in years 1 to 9 in 2021, who are now in years 3 to 11, they rose by 2.3% over those 2 years. So we've seen a definite shift in what's happening in the schools. And that's not affected by births. That's just affected by more families moving in than moving out. So it's an interesting figure, and it supports what's going on. So if you put those bits together, the data coming from Statistics Alabama is telling us, and you put together the data with the schools, it does suggest that despite the greater number of deaths than births, natural population decline, we are seeing population growth, and the current population of the Isle of Man is almost certainly now a record population again. It hadn't been. We by 2021, we were still 400 below the number from 2011, 10 years earlier. It now appears we've got more than that. We're up at around the 85,000 figure, that sort of level. Okay, there's more evidence will come as we go forward, but this is a good news picture. You know, it's I linked it in the press release with what happened in the budget last month, that we had a budget that was beginning to put in place some of the recommendations that had come out of the Population Rebalancing Select Committee the year before. So we saw maternity benefits being increased by 15% for the second time this time. We saw the child benefit being the amount of benefit paid to second and subsequent children was kept the same as the first child. It's been lower than that since something like 2014. And we saw the extension of the preschool credit system to younger children. So these are all steps that have been taken deliberately to encourage and support young families. And I see that as very, very positive. So it's too early to see the effects of those changes yet. Of course, they're only just working on going ahead now. But we are putting in place some things to encourage families. Births up slightly, positive net migration, more coming in than going out, and younger people. This is exactly what the attempt is that we're trying to achieve. You know, so it's good news.
In terms then of the overall, and maybe this is a much broader question than the specifics for the Isle of Man, but if we want the Isle of Man to be sustainable in the future, economic sustainability might well point to a need to have a greater economically active population. But overall sustainability, and certainly, you know, you're a champion of the need to act to mitigate against climate change. Overall, the global population, significant increases, even in our lifetime, huge increases in population. These must be having an impact on climate change. Is there a point where we have to seriously consider about how to manage with the population that we already have?
Yes, if you're looking at the global position, it's actually fascinating at the moment. There's something like 73 countries at the moment that think their population will decline this century. There are over 20 countries that think their population will halve this century, and that includes China. Okay, and if you stop and think about that, there's something happening here. There are many leading demographers who are saying that the world population will peak in perhaps 2050 and will then start declining again. So we're perhaps moving into a completely new phase on this. Things that are changing that are, in the developed countries, the choice of some women in particular who are saying they don't want children. You know, that there are opportunities for work and for rewards for work that are greater there now. So we're seeing people delaying childbirth, having bigger gaps between children and so on. These things are affecting us in small ways too. But even in the poorest countries, urbanization is driving a reduction in births, because when you were living in a rural community, having more children, they would perhaps be bringing in more income than they were costing you from maybe the age of seven. That changes when you're in an urban area and school attendance so on required. So as we see many changes going on around the world, we're going to see a shift in population. Indeed, some demographers are saying we've got to cope with the population bust rather than a boom. You know, the population falling. How do we cope with that? Because going with that will be an aging population and fewer births and so on. You know, we're not going to see a reversal in that sense. So sustainability is a key issue in this, absolutely. And that's, for us at in the Isle of Man at the moment, the sustainability is quite heavily an issue of how does a society cope if we've got already perhaps perhaps the sixth oldest population on the planet in terms of people over 65. We've still been seeing movement out of women of childbearing years. We've been seeing movement out of people generally in the 20s and 40s, declines in births, falling numbers of young people, impacting on the economy, on society, and so on. We've got issues of sustainability there. But you're right, in terms of climate change, if somewhere increases its population, whether that's the UK increasing population there or the Isle of Man increasing population, there are issues relating to climate change. But if we're moving forward building the infrastructure, and if the infrastructure is using renewables onshore and offshore, wind and so on, and if we're looking to make other changes in building rules, building regulations and so on to ensure that our buildings are more energy efficient, these are the sort of changes that will be needed. And it may be easier to do that with the larger population, a bigger income, because it provides some income to do that with. You know, it's not a case of more people coming in, so we're going to need another gas-fired power station. You know, it's part of the bigger picture.
That was LegCo member Paul Crane. So what do you think? Can the island cope with another big increase in population? Indeed, can we cope without it? And do you agree that every second on learning counts? Or do you think that children should have a right to go to the toilet when they want to? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Gotamayo. Thanks for listening.